of the time, and you like to be home most of the time. If I stay in one place, I lose my mind. I'm a pretty impossible lady to be with. Joey never met a bike that he didn't want to ride, and I never met a Toby that I didn't like. Scotty liked all of the books that I recommended. Even if he didn't, I wouldn't be offended. I had a dream that I had to drive to Madison to deliver a painting. For some silly reason, I took a wrong turn and ended up in Michigan. Paul Baraboe took me to the giant tire swing, gave me a push, and he started singing. I sang along while I was swinging.
The sound of our voices made us forget everything that had ever hurt our feelings.
Joey never met a bike that he didn't want to ride, and I never met a Toby that I didn't like. Scotty liked all of the books that I recommended. Even if he didn't, I wouldn't be offended. Than 24 hours. That's hardly time to take a shower, hug my family, and take your picture off the wall. Check my email, write a song, and make a few phone calls before it's time to leave again. I've got one hand on the steering wheel, one waving out the window. If I'm a spinster for the rest of my life, my will keep me warm on cold and lonely nights. Joey never met a bike that he didn't want to ride, and I never met a Toby that I didn't like. Scotty liked all of the books that I recommended. Even if he didn't, I wouldn't be offended. Even if he didn't, I wouldn't be offended.
The milk is sour. I've barely been to college, and I've been doubtful of all that I've dreamed of. The brink of my existence essentially is a comedy, the gap in my teeth and all that I can cling to. The milk is sour.
Shalala, ooh, ooh, shalala, ooh, shalala, ooh, ooh, shalala.
The milk is sour with olives on my thumbs, and all that I've stuck to and all that I've clung to. I felt like a dog. This world that I've trusted has been over and busted and rested by an arbitrary sonogram.
Shalala, ooh, ooh, shalala, ooh, shalala, ooh, ooh, shalala, ooh, shalala, ooh, shalala.
Testing? Will, can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you. Can you hear me?
I can hear you. Good morning, everyone that is tuning into Evective Meltdown.
On this fine morning.
This terrible, terrible, terrible morning. So first of all, I just want to say a happy day late birthday to my dad.
Wow.
Yeah.
Happy day late birthday to Ivan's dad.
There you go. Thanks, Will. Yeah, and then we have a special show up today. It's not exactly the regular format. It's not Effective Meltdown, per se. But we're going to be looking at Kid A.
Mm-hmm. It's still going to be effective, though.
Yeah. It's still going to be effective. But it's going to be Kid A. And it's going to be postmodern. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Man, I'm excited. So, yeah, the goal is to read Kid A in a postmodernist context to see what we can draw out from it, see why it may be considered the best album of all time. Which it is, by the way. Uh-huh. You can probably touch on that.
Well, okay, so if we are to be encapsulated in one album, I feel like Ivan's reputation precedes him, and that he's a Kid A guy. Like, this is his album. It's been a common joke within our friends. He's just the Kid A guy. True. And he mentioned this idea to us quite halfway through the semester, say, oh, I want to do this big shebang for Kid A, you know, really, really dissect it. And he wasn't able to make last week's show, so we planned and we said, you know, this is going to be how we go out this semester. We're going to go out with a bang.
That's right.
I'm sure it's going to be an Ivan dominated show, but it's going to be fun, and I can't wait to learn about what Ivan's been dissecting.
Cool, fun it may not be. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so we probably also won't go out with a bang, but with more of like a emptiness, because that is postmodernism. Oh, I mean, we'll buckle up.
I'm excited.
I guess I can just first introduce basically what would be the conceptual framework for postmodernism.
Mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. Right, so if you think of reality as always having a gap,
mm-hmm.
okay, that gap we fill with meanings of all sort, right? So, so here you go. Like, you know, romanticism would be filling that gap with like our pre-modern sense of, like, you know, I don't know, cavemanhood. You know, either way, it's not cavemanhood, but it's getting back to that pre-modern. You know, that mm-hmm. That the way that humans were supposed to live, right? And I do that in quotes. But so then, you know, you have a ton. Like, if you attend church, if you mm-hmm. are you know, a theologist, mm-hmm. okay, you fill that gap with God. Yep. Okay, and God filled that gap for humans for far longer than any other theology has filled this gap, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so again, this gap is this thing that it resists symbolization. We can't put our you know, we can't put a name on it. We mm-hmm. know it exists, and that's why we fill it with meaning. It's because it mm-hmm. provides the grounding with which we stand.
Yep.
Okay. But then you have the Enlightenment.
Oh.
Okay. And the Enlightenment comes in, and the Enlightenment says, okay, God is dead. and so what is at the center of all this?
Mm-hmm.
Well, they found out that it was nothingness.
Mm-hmm.
And again, the Enlightenment did that, but again, this is happening in like the 1600s. You're thinking of like John Locke running around in hyperspeed, you know, and Jacques Rousseau, and, you know, they're all mm-hmm. running around France, and they're coming up with all these ideas of freedom and enlightenment and, you know, unalienated rights, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so what they end up getting to is that, okay, so God may be absent,
mm-hmm.
but what they put in the middle as meaning is reason and rationality. Mm-hmm. You know, that I can know the world just by looking around, and I can use my rational, logical faculties and come to these truths, and I don't need there to be a meaningful center. I don't need God to be at the center of this meaning.
Mm-hmm.
I can figure out meaning for myself. So they put logic and rationality right
mm-hmm.
in the middle, but what else did they put in the middle by virtue of using their personal logic and rationality? Well, they put themselves, right?
Mm-hmm.
So they took God out of the center mm-hmm. of the meaning-making, of the center of life, but they just placed themselves,
mm-hmm.
right? And that's what modernism is.
Okay.
So modernism was birthed out of the Enlightenment movement, and modernism truly is that. Modernism is the suturing up,
mm-hmm.
right? And so sutures is going to become a very big part of this whole discussion. They suture up that gap in the center with themselves, mm-hmm. with reason and rationality. But reason and rationality are just propelled by themselves.
Yeah.
So what you get from modernism is a few things. Modernism mm-hmm. is knowledge, okay. right? Modernism is authenticity. You know, mm-hmm. it's like the authentic original will of the person that's, you know, making the meaning, that modernist, right? Mm-hmm. All the modernist artists that you think of, T.S. Eliot especially, mm-hmm. all flirted with fascism to a degree,
okay.
right? Because, mm-hmm. you know, they there was something about the singularity
yep.
That's attractive. So modernism would be knowledge, authenticity, singularity,
mm-hmm.
right? Masculinism, phallogocentrism, mm-hmm. right? You know, so it's like it all comes together, and what you realize is that by putting reason and rationality at the center, we ended up with pretty much the worst atrocities that the world has ever seen.
Yeah.
And again, that's not to say that that was modernism per se, but that was through some of the acts of modernism. By putting reason and rationality at the center, we ended up with things like the Holocaust.
Yeah.
You know, we ended up with a fascistic leader who took God out of the center and put himself in there and and justified his reign by reason and rationality. It appealed to everyone's quote-unquote logic.
Yeah.
So what you find with – so postmodernism basically comes in, and postmodernism doesn't necessarily come after modernism, okay? Only in a temporal context you refer to it as that. But postmodernism, you could say, was preceding modernism. Like postmodernism is saturated in Plato. And, you know, if you think about the cave allegory, his calling into question whether or not we're actually seeing reality, that's postmodernism.
Okay.
So postmodernism is recognizing the atrocities that, in a more of a temporal context, recognizing the atrocities of World War II, right? And recognizing that, okay, this whole reason and rationality thing, this might have gotten us into a pickle. This might have created some of the worst, you know, ideologies and the worst atrocities of all time. So where do we go from here? So postmodernism as a... You can't say what it is, okay? That would be incorrect. You can only say postmodernism is not. It's not modernism. But at the same time, it's also contained in modernism. But postmodernism is not anything. It's the thing which resists all symbolization. But basically, postmodernism is deconstructive. Okay, so what it's going to do, it's going to take out whatever is at that center. And it's going to show you that, like, it's false. It's just a copy of a copy of a copy, right? So you have, like, so, I mean, the reason I'm taking this postmodernism class, so I can go through some of these readings, but, like, so the first reading that we did was Walter Benjamin's, his notion of the aura, right, in mechanical reproduction. And he was showing how, you know, we fret and worry so much that, like, a painting has an aura, you know, because that's original. Right, the authenticity, the singularity, but like a film doesn't, because it's mechanically reproduced en masse in millions, right?
Yeah,
and that's what postmodernism. Postmodernism is destroying any semblance of this aura. Like, who cares about this aura? The original painting itself. Why is the original painting any more valuable than its copy? The original painting itself may just be a copy of a copy. We don't know. We can't know anything for, you know, certain. Right, and so it's this notion of being just a copy of a copy of a copy, and it's never ending, and you never know, right? And so that's where you get to Kid A. Okay? Kid A. It's not the Kid A. It's not the Kid anything. It's just Kid A. Okay, so already... Kid A is getting at this postmodern sense of plurality, right? That there is not this singular kid that I am addressing. I am addressing Kid A out of a series of assumedly Kid B, Kid Z, Kid D. The album could have been called Kid F, you know, and it wouldn't have actually mattered. Because Kid A is aware of the plurality of his being, whoever this Kid A is. Yeah, so so then you have so then that kind of covers the singularity-ness of and the authenticity of modernism as opposed to the plurality and the multiplicity of postmodernism. And again, it's just important to remember that without that center anymore, right? Without this aura of modernism, postmodernism was getting at a deconstructive truth that all the meaning in this world is nowhere and everywhere at the exact same time. Everything and nothing is in the right and wrong place at every single time, okay? Yeah, and so postmodernism can go, I mean, all postmodern works, a lot of postmodern works, and postmodernism is contained within all works, right? So even if you have a modernist album, there's postmodernism saturated in that medium because it's contained within it. Because postmodernism is deconstructive, which was modernism all along, right? But no matter what, you just have to remember that. Okay, so we're looking at the postmodern anxiety is the realization of this centerlessness that doesn't have reason and rationality at its center anymore because it doesn't. Nothing makes sense.
Yep.
When we try to make sense of things with reason and rationality, it doesn't go well. Right? It goes so poorly. Yeah. And so the postmodernism makes clear its object at the center, right? It doesn't it doesn't feign this like this weird way that modernism does of showing like the nothingness at the center, but then saying that truth functions just as well without a truthful center. Postmodernism just shows the object right in your face and shows that it means nothing insofar as you think it means something. And so then we arrive at, and this is probably the final like conceptual framework that's being worked out here, is that, okay, so Lacan might be the only true post-structuralist that we've ever had in the way of he was the only one that actually provided a solution to like what is at the center, what is at that suture, right? You know, or like what is the suture? And Lacan was a psychoanalyst reading Freud, and so what he said was, "What's at that center is called jouissance. It is enjoyment as the real thing, because that's what it is. It's enjoyment as the real thing, the ultimate thing. That is the thing that through psychoanalysis." He claimed was driving us at the very center. So whenever we're babies, right, we're just in that world where, you know, we're just in bits and pieces, right? You know what I mean? We have no control of our limbs. We can't talk. We don't even care about mama really anymore yet. You know what I mean? Everything is drive. It's just food, water, or whatever, shelter, you know? Everything's just drive, and we just get satisfaction out of you know, getting those drives. But again, that would be the real, like the baby, the infant. Then the infant moves into the imaginary. When the infant realizes that mom is the center of my whole world, my entire world. Mom gives me food through, you know, milk. And mom is the reason why I'm living, but the baby still does not have language. And then there's a, you know, there's a thing called the mirror stage, and then you have the abject. But basically, then out of the imaginary, we develop language through seeing ourselves and wanting to become that. And once we develop language, all of a sudden we cannot access that real, that drive state. You know, what was driving us whenever we were an infant, where we were just, it's the same thing that drives your dog, right? That your dog is in a state of the real. We can never access that real because we developed language, and the real is everything that language left out. Do you see what I'm saying? And that's the huge point. Because if the real is everything that language left out, like, why was it left out of language? And so then you have jouissance, which, just think of jouissance as the drive for satisfaction, right? Jouissance is like that obscene object at the center of our existence that we've created language to act as if it doesn't exist. And again, we only see there's a gap in reality from language because we, you know, we speak, but really what's at the center is jouissance. And so as Zizek would claim, and as we were shown, you know, throughout the whole semester in this class, jouissance was guiding modernism all along. It was guiding theology all along, right? So when the modernists put reason and rationality at the center, well, what was guiding their thought processes, what is reason and rationality? Well, it's some absurd enjoyment, some crazy unhinged, you could, think of jouissance as being, it's quite dark, okay? it's something disgusting and funny, and I'll laugh until my head falls off. Like, that is jouissance. It's just the satisfaction of a drive, and it's nonsensical. It's animalistic. And jouissance was driving reason and rationality all along. And that's why it's gotten us into the pickle, because that's the obscene object that's in the center, right? Whenever, when we look at all of the, you know, the modernist whatever, or so think about something like the war on drugs.
Yeah.
Or the war on crime.
Mm-hmm.
All these wars they weren't based on reason and rationality. Crime rates, yes, on rationally, were up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we could perceive that through statistics and math and whatever.
Yeah.
No. The war on crime and the war on drugs was literally just a manifestation of jouissance in all of the politicians' hearts.
Mm-hmm.
The war on drugs was nothing more than a war to gain power through sadistic enjoyment.
Yes.
From the, well, the Republican Party, to, you know, incarcerate minorities all around America and rally support in the South in order to change the South from the from a Democratic, you know, region to a Republican one.
Mm-hmm.
And they did that through enjoyment, because it was penetrating it all along.
Mm-hmm.
We all have these perverse desires, these perverse drives. And they're just waiting around the corner, but we can't explain it. We can't coincide with it, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that was a lot of yapping.
Yeah.
But so that kind of brings us to where I think we can start, the national anthem.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and so the national anthem is getting at what I'm talking about, this jouissance.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, this unhinged, crazy drive, and you'll hear it throughout the song. And then if you notice, at the end, it'll end with the, you know, it's like that choir.
Yeah.
And he'll say, smile. And it should send chills down your spine now that you know all this.
Uh-huh.
Okay, so let's see Will's reaction. And, yeah, in the national anthem, it's pretty hype.
Let's go.
Let's get in touch with our Shoey songs. Smile.
Back in yours. I have noticed that smile before, but I never really knew what they were saying, or I maybe even just disregarded it a little bit. And it is an important part of that song, now I think about it.
I think my mic might be down. Can you hear me?
You're showing up on the levels.
All right, I hope everyone can hear me. Oh, that, you know, that, you know, that helps, Will. Thanks. Yeah, okay, so, and if you heard the unhinged, you know, jazz at the end.
It's definitely just, yeah, a manifestation of those perverse desires.
Perverse, yeah, yeah.
Because no, it's perverse jazz, in a way.
Yeah, it totally is. Yeah, and it's the inversion, you know, of what jazz used to be, something smooth, something clean. Yeah, and it's going nuts with it, right?
Yeah.
And then at the end, it's, you have that, you know, that... Dun, 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 you know, thing, and I think it's like some sort of, again, I think it's the callback to a national anthem of some sort. And at the end, it said smile, because that kind of is like that otherness, that thing that's all around us that we can't put into language, and then just looking at us and telling us smile, you know. So that's getting at the jouissance at the center.
Yeah, it even seems like that song could even just be just like a reflection on fascism, like, oh, this is the national anthem of what is created when we have jouissance.
Right, exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly, and especially as a national anthem, right? And the thing it's getting at is that, well, all of our structures are filled with this jouissance, right? Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? The national anthem, every time we do a national anthem, we are saluting to a structure that is penetrated deeply with this deep, perverse enjoyment, and it structures so much.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so even like this is like our driving force. Like this is our national anthem. This is what we march to.
Right, exactly. You know, to go, you know, colonize other nations, right? And also, just like for anyone who's listening, this does not mean that we, at our center we are disgusting, perverse beings. This is just saying that at our center, Lacanian postmodern theory might be positing that we have a lot more animalistic drives than we are willing to admit, and it influences our symbolic life where we speak language, right? And it does influence what we cannot see. It becomes the unconscious because it's left out of language, and language can't describe it. You can be a great person through language, okay? Like, language and entering into the symbolic order may be man's greatest accomplishment of all time. And again, like, there's so many good quotes. I won't get into it. But the point being that that like your ego formation may be the worst and the best thing that's ever happened to you. You know, that if you did one thing in your life, it was forming your ego at the age of 16 months. Okay. Other than that, you might not have done anything else in your whole life, but you did that, and that was quite impressive. And that's something that that we all kind of need to reckon with. Like, we must not throw out language as being, you know, so limiting, because to a certain extent, I do want to be limited by language, because the other side is also scary. You know, it's the real, right? And so then, right, we get into the question of who's in the bunker. Who is in that bunker? Right, and so Kid A, its eighth song is Idiotech, and it's probably the most danceable song on the album, and it's definitely the most flitty, you know, and it kind of is just like anxiety, paranoid, just crazy.
Yeah.
And it starts off with like, who's in the bunker, who's in the bunker, women and children first.
Yep.
And I think that's puzzled critics for forever, like, just, no, who is in that bunker? What is he talking about? I think that question is very postmodern. I think it's asking, what's in the bunker? What is that thing that we cannot see that's all around us, but, you know, it's at the center of our meaning? And so you have women and children first, which provides a very, very peculiar aspect to what Kid A is getting at, where I see it very much as you know, unveiling this center, this jouissance real, right? But saying women and children first is quite modernist.
Yeah.
You know, to a certain extent, I guess I'm trying to think, man, I am hearing music. Are you hearing music, Will?
I'm not hearing music at all. No.
Oh, man. No, I got it. So Idiotech is really getting at that, you know, what is at the center? And women and children first. The reason why I say it might be modernist, because the modernist impulse was to see women and children
mm-hmm.
as the, or especially women, as the embodiment of that real, like the physical,
mm-hmm.
right? And so putting them in the bunker first almost may be more modernist because it's putting, you know, if men are supposed to be the rational, the reasonable, mm-hmm. the reasonable, the ones who exercise their logic and you know, do things through the mind, right? Mm-hmm. They would not be in the middle, but the women mm-hmm. would be in the middle as beings of desire for that phallicocentric man, right? Mm-hmm. Hugely problematic, yeah. Okay? In case you didn't read my tone.
Mm-hmm.
Or is it getting at women and children first in the bunker because we are not going to penetrate, the men cannot penetrate this space of the real the way that we used to. Mm-hmm. It's impenetrable by man alone.
Mm-hmm.
So who knows? But it does bring up the important question of who and what is in that bunker.
Mm-hmm.
And you'll definitely get it as the song goes on. So yeah, I think we might as well just get right into it. But just be thinking about who is in that bunker.
Who is in the bunker? Thank you.
they go, I'll laugh until my head falls off. So that really is the jouissance that it's getting at. Who's in the bunker? And then you see that Tom York will scream, you know, or not scream, it's beautiful, but it's here, I'm allowed everything all of the time. Because exactly, when you get into that bunker, when you get into that reel, you are allowed everything in terms of your drive, but nothing in terms of your subjectivity. So, yes, your head will, your head will literally fall off. Do you know, I mean, in sort of the way of like, you will lose, if you think of your head as me, you know, I, when you enter into that bunker, when you get into that space of the reel, that postmodernism is suggesting might be there,
mm-hmm.
While deconstructing all the modernist logics, your head might actually fall off because you cannot coincide. You cannot, your eye, you know, mm-hmm. literally, like your eye, mm-hmm. as in eye, not your eyeball, but yep. like your eye,
mm-hmm.
as a person, that cannot coincide with that bunker. What is in there is inexplainable. By language. And as soon as you actually experience it, when you actually go in that bunker, you know, you would cease to exist. You would cease to have some conception of me. And so I think that song's totally getting at this anxiety of, like, what's in the bunker?
Mm-hmm.
We're scared, but we're drawn to it. Women and children first, and I'll laugh until my head falls off. You know, that, and Kid A, as you see, it's, yeah. I'll get through the PSA. It's totally, you know, it's slowly descending.
Mm-hmm.
Into that state of the real. So, quickly, we have to do a PSA. Did you know that there are trillions of tiny creatures swimming in your stomach right now? Don't worry, they're called microbes, and they play a crucial role in digestion, immunity, and overall body health. One easy way to keep your gut's microbes happy is probiotics. Found in yogurt, probiotics are beneficial bacteria that help maintain balance in your digestive system. These microbes are actually what allow you to make yogurt from yogurt, meaning you could hypothetically make infinite amounts of yogurt from a single container. How postmodern. Now, that's a lot of yogurt. This has been a public service announcement from the Tufts Education Radio and WMFO Medford.
Yippee. Have to squeeze that in.
Right. Anyway, and so now we are brought to the song Kid A.
Mm-hmm.
And this is not the album version. Okay? Mm-hmm. What we're going to play is the YouTube version.
Early.
It's the early version that came out, I think it came out post 2000, so after they had released the album already.
Mm-hmm.
And also just for a little bit of backstory, I mean, you have to imagine that Radiohead are coming off of three albums, two of which were very critically acclaimed, the previous of which, OK Computer,
yep.
OK Computer is just launched them to stardom and
for
launched
sure.
them to what? Singularity, like mm-hmm. the modernist. Oh, they are the heroes, right?
Mm-hmm.
Of our generation. They saved the decade.
Yep.
And they hated that.
They
hated
really
that so much.
Mm-hmm.
Kid A is a response to that. Kid A is getting to the nothingness that they felt all around. They had incredible writer's block. And so Kid A, the song that we're about to hear, on the album version, so they couldn't figure out what to write about, so what they did is they put a bunch of obscene words in a hat
mm-hmm.
in the mansion that they were recording in, and then they all just picked out some words, and they basically created this song,
mm-hmm.
You know, some lyrics from a little bit of a, it's like a drum machine line that they had, and
mm-hmm.
then some just keys that were very reminiscent of Kraftwerk, and Tom York refused to sing it. Because he said
really?
It was too dark. He said
mm-hmm.
it was too disgusting.
Yep.
And again, it's not disgusting in the, you know, in the way that you might imagine, but like it has a dark energy. And so
yep.
he refused to sing it. So what he did is so he just went, I stepped away. Right? He did it
mm-hmm.
in a monotone way, and
yep.
then he had Johnny Greenwood pitch the whole thing.
Yep.
But on this live version, we get to see Tom York singing
it. Wow.
He's getting in touch with that jouissance. And the jouissance is all around. This
mm-hmm.
is a field recording from a live show.
Wow.
So, yeah, let's hear this.
Let's hear it.
The Kid A
early version.
Yeah. The Kid A enthusiast will really like this.
There we go.
So, all right.
Thank you.
So that was Kid A. And again, you're getting at that Jewy songs again. You know, I mean, that live version is much more similar to the national anthem than it is to its you know, I guess the base for its, because really that one, you know, that song is just a copy of a copy. It's a copy of a Kid A, the song on the album, which is just a copy of whatever other kid is there. Anyway, and but yeah, and that song, that song puts the obscenities of the lyrics really into sound. Yeah. So the rats and the children follow me out of town. We've got heads while you've got ventriloquists. Standing in the shadows at the end of my bed. And again, like, what is standing in the shadows? It's that thing that you can't put into language. It's that jouissance is all around. Oh. So yeah, we gotta keep clipping along here. So we're gonna play How to Disappear Completely. Just to show, right, that you know, I mean, that this is the modernist anxiety of being in a postmodern world, and that you realize that you are everything and nowhere all the time, and there's nothing going on, but you want to be a singularity. So this is really getting at, yeah. So how can I dissociate? Right, you know,
this isn't happening.
How can I just say this isn't happening? Yeah. So let's hear it.
I'm not here.
So there you go. Little factoid. That song was written by Thom Yorke after Michael Stipe was instructing him on how to deal with the stage fright and the anxiety and the strobe lights after the OK Computer tour, because it became so overwhelming.
Wow.
But again, it's getting at the, like, there's too many things going on, you know? There's too many people. too many people all around. And so, by the way, this album also is, like, so postmodern that it is itself influenced everywhere, right? You know, we can see Aphex Twin all throughout this whole thing.
For
right?
sure.
I would say Aphex Twin is probably the biggest influence. And, you know, you have, like, Tree Fingers, which is almost getting at a space that's... Mm-hmm. But it's almost like Tree Fingers is... You can't describe it in language. You know, it's this ambient, electronic, immersive world that just resists all symbolization. You know, and then you have... I mean, this album was so radical just because it was a rock band that was, you know, sort of mainstream, and then coming forward with no guitars.
Yeah.
You know, if you're Johnny Greenwood and all of a sudden, you know, you don't have a guitar. Yeah, it's so terrifying. But of course, Johnny Greenwood is everywhere in this album.
For sure.
It's so funny. So I think Kid A is a postmodern masterpiece. And I think that's why it appealed to everyone in 2000, whenever we were all having to kind of reckon with this new century, and the technology that was coming from it. And again, it's just important to remember that Kid A doesn't attempt to be anything original, authentic, you know, it is getting at what is at the center of our existence, that jouissance, that nothingness, that meaninglessness, that bunker, right? That everything is in its right place, never. And by the way, Will sent me a picture of this D3 cross country runner who won nationals, and it was a picture of him, you know, like, basically celebrating after
winning
the whole thing. And you know, the song that he titled, it was Everything in Its Right Place, right? Which Everything in Its Right Place is, of course, the Radiohead song that starts Kid A, right? You know, and the track comes in and goes, everything, right?
Very superficial understanding of what the track is trying to convey.
Because there, exactly. So do you see that Christian Bask had it all wrong? Everything is not in its right place. That's what the song's getting at. Him getting first at cross country, well, he did not achieve the object. He still has drives that he will never understand, right? That I will never understand. Nothing is in its right place, but everything at the same time is in its right place, because everything is nowhere. Nowhere is everything. None of it makes sense. It's all bonkers. And so Kid A is just getting at that. But, alas, Kid A could not resist a suture. And Kid A did suture, right? So we talked about at the beginning of the show that suture, right, being being what you know, what closes that gap that we see in reality. Well, Kid A couldn't resist, and Kid A chose love. Okay, and I know that sounds cliche, but it's something just like a film, like Everything Everywhere All at Once does. Where a lot of postmodern films, you know, will take postmodern theory, but they will try to suture it with all sorts of sutures. Like, you know, a modernist movie might try to suture it with the phallus, you know, or, you know, it might try to be sutured with the woman at the center, or it might be they might try to center it with the Kid A at the center, right? You know, it doesn't matter. There always is a suture, and Kid A chooses something that also can't be put into words, which is love. Anyway, and so they finish on a motion picture soundtrack, and basically this is Thom Yorke deciding that it's over. And it's beautiful, and it might come as a shock at the end of the film, at the end of the
album,
but it sutures up nicely. So I think we're gonna end there. I just want you to remember that this is Ivan and Will, and you are listening to 91.5 FM WMFO Medford, Tufts Freeform Radio.
Thank you for listening.
Thank you for listening.